Leg Ray talking, Anthony Artaud. Monty, that was fun. This is where we kick loose a little bit on the After Dark. This is for Patreon.
Thank you for your
All right, I'm unbuttoning my type. My top button is coming unbuttoned. Imagine that.
Nice. Ooh, look at that.
Very good. Yeah. And it's going to get a little spicy here, too, because we're going to talk about Anais Nin and Artaud. Monty, what do you know about Anais Nin?
Nothing.
Oh. Brad, can you give Monty and our Patreon listeners? I'm sure the Patreon people have heard the core episode that we did with the great Gio Panicetti.
Sure.
But yeah, give him a primer.
I'll try to give the couple minute primer. So she's best known as a writer and particularly a diarist. She was an obsessive diarist, alive in roughly the same age as Artaud. Died later because Artaud didn't live that long. So she died in the 70s. I can't remember what year she was born, but she was palling around with people like Henry Miller, a lot of the early psychotherapists, and a real kind of visionary modernist writer who also slept with everyone. Like
that is a modernist writer right there.
Yeah, almost anybody, the list of names is kind of incredible. She maintained a husband on both coasts for years, like in the 50s, somehow managed to pull that off. Slept with everyone, including her dad.
I was on board. I was rooting for her until that.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a way to describe this. It just says, "Hey, she's having a good time. What's the problem, man?
Just a modern woman with a high body count."
It's
too high.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You're not, I don't judge a woman's body count, but sometimes I judge a couple of the choices in that list.
Yeah. There's one of those that oof.
You're having a good time at a party and your jokes are all landing and everything's working and you're really into it. And then you just tell that one joke that goes just too far.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. Anais Nin, and she's sort of a darling of a certain set of kind of hyper literate, particularly ladies, Brad. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. She was sort of rediscovered by the sort of a second feminist movement in the early 70s, late 60s. And, I say this. She's a brilliant writer. Doing the episode, I came to really, really respect her writing. I mean, she's a sort of unexpected visionary in a way. But her life is just like buckle your seatbelt. And she did have a dalliance with Artaud.
And we'll get to it. I think we have to clarify for Monty just a little bit. Was she molested as a child and then later she came back?
She was molested and abused in a variety of ways by her father. When her father kind of came back around into her life, she slept with him, and I think there was a sort of a subconscious element of which she was going to she was always seeking his love as a child. She was going to get that love, and like in her mind was like the purest form, and then she was going to pull the power move of abandoning him. That's kind of what was going on in old Nin's head at some level. But
I've got a lot to think about before I go to sleep tonight.
Welcome to the dark room, Art of Darkness. I've got a little bit from, again, Blows and Bombs, the Artaud biography. Now, he was writing a book on Heliogabalus. Are we familiar with that? With who that is?
No, I can look that up in the background.
Well, I'll read. No, I've got the intro.
Oh, okay.
Heliogabalus was emperor from the age of 14 to 18. His reign was characterized by murder, incest, sodomy, debauchery, and an anarchic ridicule for the powers of government. Artaud structured his account of Heliogabalus's life around the breaking of corporeal borders and the expulsion of fluids, notably blood and sperm. Around the corpse of Heliogabalus, dead without a tomb and cut apart by his police in the latrines of his own palace, there is an intense circulation of blood and excrement, while around his cradle there is an intense circulation of sperm, quoting the book. Artaud saw contradictions in the life of Heliogabalus, which accorded that life a great poetry of subversion and physical extremity. The poetry of Heliogabalus' life is also that of Artaud's own theater, quoting, "There is in all poetry an essential contradiction. Poetry is the grinding of a multiplicity which throws out flames, and poetry which brings back order first of all resuscitates disorder. Disorder with inflamed appearances. It makes appearances collide and brings them back to a unique point. Fire, gesture, blood, scream." So that's the background of what he's doing when Annaeus Nin is around. I'm going to read here. Annaeus Nin, I'm not going to call her an Ardho because it's kind of rude, but she's like, she's bigger than that. But that's the territory we're in. Let's be frank. Annaeus Nin was close to Artaud during the period when he was writing the book, and she described Artaud's wild temperament after he had voraciously absorbed the prophetic power of Heliogabalus' life. Can you just imagine? Like, this is what you're up to on a Friday night? Good God. Here's what she said. Artaud sat in the cupola. I don't know what that is. And in any case, Artaud sat in the cupola, pouring out poetry, talking of magic. "I am Heliogabalus, the mad Roman emperor, because he becomes everything he writes about. In the taxi, he pushed back his hair from a ravaged face. The beauty of the summer day did not touch him. He stood up in the taxi and stretching out his arms, he pointed to the crowded streets. The revolutions will come soon. All this will be destroyed. The world must be destroyed."
that's second date material right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's right.
This is my friend, Antonine.
Yeah.
He says the craziest things.
Also, I once described him as the beauty of a summer day did not touch his face.
It's so hardcore. I mean, yeah, I've got more. Still lacking the financial means to stage a spectacle which would transfer and realize this imagery in the theater space, he's got these big ideas, Artaud took it upon himself to perform the theater essay itself. His reading of The Theater and the Plague took place at the Sorbonne on the 6th of April of 1933 as part of a series of intellectual lectures organized by René Allendy. Annaeus Nin was present and gave an account in her journal of Artaud's performance and his audience's reaction. She's a diarist. Mm-hmm. "His face was contorted with anguish. One could see the perspiration dampening his hair. His eyes dilated. His muscles became cramped. His fingers struggled to retain their flexibility. He made one feel the parched and burning throat, the pain, the fever, the fire in the guts. He was in agony. He was screaming. He was delirious. At first, people gasped. Then they began to laugh. Everyone was laughing. They hissed. Then one by one, they began to leave noisily, talking, protesting. They banged the door as they left. More protestations, more jeering. But Artaud went on until the last gasp and stayed on the floor. He was hurt, baffled by the jeering. He spat out his anger. They always want to hear about. They want an objective conference on the theater and the plague. And I want to give them the experience itself, the plague itself. So they will be terrified and awaken. I want to awaken them. They do not realize they are dead. Their death is total, like deafness, blindness. This is agony I portrayed. Mine, yes, and everyone who is alive."
Ooh, what a lecture.
Can you imagine? He was so serious about that thing, though. Like, the film should not show the thing. The film should be the thing. The theater should not present the story. The theater should be the story. It should all be of one. That's the cruelty of it, is that it's totalizing and like fully realized, not representative.
Right. Right.
So I've got a little more here about their relationship, and then we'll get to the Austrian corporal. Artaud's relationship with Anais Nin was shattered by his own drug addiction, which made him sexually impotent. Nin fellated him, but he was unable to penetrate her body. And that's a hell of a parenthetical.
Mm-hmm.
Fellas, right? If you can live a life and make a little art and just avoid parentheticals like that.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
go for it.
I do have a little like I'm kind of laughing at this whole like I'm Heliogabalus on the revolution but I can't really get it up, so
yeah, you're gonna have to try to blow me and,
yeah, don't mention it to anybody.
Yeah, don't write that down.
Yeah, exactly.
In your diary,
right? And the most famous diarist of all time.
Yeah, don't write that down. Yeah, that's unfortunate. And especially by his appalled suspicions about her long-term incestuous relationship with her father. So he was especially appalled.
Yeah. What I had read, he picked up on her that had happened, even though she hadn't said anything about it. Somehow he like got that vibe. He got the she slept with her dad vibe off of her, which is a rare vibe.
Gracious. Anais Nin's is she French? She American. Remind me of her background.
She's French Cuban. She's a
rootless cosmopolitan. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's go on a little more because this is so interesting. Anais Nin perceived their relationship as essentially poetic rather than sexual. That's worse than being friend zoned. Friend zone you can live with. It's like, okay, we go do mini golf sometimes.
I don't think friend zone gets parentheticals.
Right. Right.
Right.
You're just right. History just remembers you as a friend. It's not that bad.
And really. A friend's a good thing to be. Yeah. Right. It's good to be friends, especially with like famous diarists. You get a shout out every once in a while.
That's good. Yeah.
Like my mini golf score is going to get into the most famous diary of all time. Right. That's a good thing. Like,
our relationship was poetic in nature.
Yeah. Woof. Jeez. I think I got something that tops everything from the main episode in terms of those little pithy assessments of Artaud and his work.
Mm.
Here's Anais Nin. To be kissed by Artaud was to be drawn towards death, towards insanity.
I think that's just true. I don't think there's a metaphor in there.
That right. Yeah. I'm sorry. That is metal. As
that is.
That is so metal. She told him that she loved only the poet in him, not the flesh and bones. Brother, brother, I said, I have such a deep love for you, but do not touch me. I am not to be touched. You are the poet. You walk inside my dreams. I love the pain and the flame in you, but do not touch me. Artaud contented himself with this perception of their relationship for some time. He was elated by Anais Nin's interests in the writing of Heliogabalus and her silent attentiveness when he took her to see the Leiden painting around which he had constructed his essay Direction and Metaphysics. He wrote to her, several things draw us together terribly, but one especially, our silence. On the platform of the railway station, when I said to you, we are like two souls lost in the infinite spaces, I felt this fluid silence talking to me, and it would have been capable of making me sob with joy. Artaud was apprehensive that his drug addiction would alienate Anais Nin from him, as it had happened with a previous lover. They met often either at Nin's house or at a cafe. That's what it was, the couple or couple cafe in Montparnasse. As the summer went on, Artaud grew increasingly dubious about the literary life led by an Anais Nin and unsettled by her sexual intimacy, both with her father and with René Allendy. He began to feel that she was manipulating him as just one more writer in her circle. His feelings became dangerously intense. Artaud said, what a divine joy it would be to crucify a being like you, who are so evanescent, so elusive. I was frightened by his fervor when he said, between us, there could be a murder. In June, Anais Nin went to stay with her father in the south of France, and on her return to Paris, Artaud permanently ended their relationship in bitterness and anger. She would publish a short story about him in English with the title Je suis le plus malade des surrealists. I am the malady of the surrealists, something like that. the events of their relationship are described with accuracy in the first part of the story, often taken directly from her journals or from Artaud's letter. She changes his name to Pierre. In any case.
Wow.
That's intense.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that a much murder detail about between us. Ooh. Get out of there.
That's good. Yeah, right.
He dumped you after he said that.
Right. Well, then she goes down to bang her dad.
Right.
And then comes and then back.
Comes back.
Yeah. And then he is like, this is no longer a poetic relationship.
Yeah. I believe that short story about him is in the collection Under a Glass Bell, which I actually highly recommend. Nin is one of these figures. She's like my perfect example of this. And as a person, she's terrified. She kind of terrifies me like a demon would terrify you. Mm-hmm. But I'm also like in awe of her talent at the same time. It's very unsettling.
Perfect subject for our show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you make of all that, Monty? Have you ever had a poetic relationship that profound?
No. And I'm going to try not to.
You're an artist, Monty. Come on. You're sitting on a job.
Yeah, I'm an artist, but I don't want to get crucified.
Right, right. I hear
I'm
that.
I'm trying to stay away from being crucified or crucifying anybody.
It's good to avoid that.
You need to know your limits.
That's a hell of a parent. That's a hell of a parenthetical. And and by the way, he was crucified.
Yeah.
Right. Some people
I'd rather be friend zoned like, than that.
I would rather be good friends with somebody who's famous than somebody who's famous telling me they want to crucify me because of how godlike I am. I don't know. I don't know about
keep coming on the pod long enough. See what happens. You know, some people have like halitosis, they got bad breath, you know, you could brush your teeth. There is nothing that takes off the stink of death. If the gal thinks that you taste like death when you kiss her,
oh my God.
Death and insanity.
Oof. Wow. Right. Well, Monty, you may not know, but you know, longtime listeners and followers of Art of Darkness, including our dear Patreon listeners who are listening now. Thank you again. We genuinely appreciate the support. It really always gives us a shot in the arm when we get a new patron and just means a lot. But Monty, when it's finally time, when Brad and I want to kill our poetic relationship with one another, when it's finally time to kill the show, mm-hmm. we're going to quietly drop the Hitler episode and disappear like Kaiser Soze. At the end of that's the plan. Yeah. What's delete the Patreon?
Delete all social media. Patreon check has to clear.
Yep. And we finally
resume our government names. Mm-hmm. And
right. Well, in any case, Artaud did have or claim to have had like a meeting and an argument with the painter, the Austrian Lance Corporal, who tried to get into art school and was rejected and then went on to other things.
That's a hell of a parenthetical.
Right. So here we go. So we're in Berlin. The accumulating collapse of a previously affluent and secure society in Berlin was fascinating to Artaud. The streets are full of admirably dressed beggars, some of whom must be the former middle classes. He believed that society in Berlin and throughout Europe was preserving itself from catastrophe only by a thin screen of decadent consumption, fashion, and gluttony. Boy, that sounds like America now. Oh, boy. In the years to come, especially at the Asylum of Rodez, Artaud would recall seeing and even briefly speaking to Hitler in May of 1932 at the Romanisches Café in Berlin. Such an encounter was just plausible. The Romanisches Café was a fashionable literary and political meeting place, much like Reddit. Like the Dome in Paris of the kind that Hitler had sometimes frequented. In May 1946, shortly before his release from Rodez, from the madhouse, Artaud was to evoke a dialogue he had had with Hitler in this cafe. According to Artaud, Hitler had told him that he was going to impose Hitlerism on Europe, just as gratuitously as he might have imposed hip hip hooray-ism. Artaud retorted to Hitler that he was just that he was crazy to lead people by ideas rather than with actions, and a violent brawl ensued.
Okay.
You know, I punched Hitler one time.
I sucker punched that guy.
I'll go on the record here. I don't like Hitler. Not a fan of his political or artistic works. Just going on the record, making sure that's stated.
Yeah, same here. I don't think you're alone in that.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty popular. It's very much a cold take at this point.
What did our friend of the show Norm MacDonald say about Hitler?
Yeah. The more I find out about this guy, he's a real jerk.
Yeah, not a fan of that guy. I don't think he got punched in the face that day.
No.
Personally.
Yeah.
I wish he did.
Sure.
But I don't think he did.
He had it coming. I think you could agree he had it coming. But I don't think it happened either.
I wish Artaud punched him in the face.
Yeah.
One of those punches
you hear about, these horrible stories, somebody gets in a bar fight, like, I punched the guy one time and his head hit a stool and he exploded.
Yeah, right.
One of those would have been good.
Yeah.
I don't think it happened.
I think Artaud is a bit of a fabulist here, and you know, he was just getting out of the madhouse, so who knows? But anyway, that's the other part of the story.
Yeah, I think that's the detail there that I kind of hooked into.
Not the most credible narrator,
but an interesting narrator. Anecdote, and interesting that he was going around, you know, he was telling people this, right? Yeah,
indeed. Well, he would send Hitler magic, like curses and magic spells and things as well. He did.
Yeah.
At least one of those. So what a character. And the well of Artaud just keeps giving. And Monty, any final words? You've got ink, it's all red. Are you working on anything else? Anything coming up?
I've got a 10-minute play going up next month. It's called Diner Booth Fracture. It's going to be part of the Cut Edge Collective Festival. We're doing it at the Tank in New York City. So if you're in New York City, looking at the Tank, looking at the Cut Edge Festival, come see this 10-minute weird little play that I'm doing. Going to have a fun little bell on stage that you're going to hear rung a lot.
Awesome. When that's getting closer, you know, email us or something. We'll promote it on Twitter and things.
Perfect. 100%. Yeah, I'll remember to do that for sure.
All right.
What else? Yeah, I talked about Ink and the main thing. Go listen to Ink. It's good. I think it's good.
Yes, it is good. People should listen to it. Absolutely.
Go listen to Ink. Monty, thanks for coming on. You're welcome anytime.
Yeah, thanks, man. This was so much fun. So good to meet you.
Good to meet you, too. This was a lot of fun. Yeah.